Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So, it's kind of going to be an F-list video, so we will get to that. Every video, who knows exactly what the video, I don't know, you know, where the video is going to go exactly. But anyway, that'll be the idea eventually, but first I will just give you notice. That I have done a slight website update thing. I'm going to fix some other things eventually, but there's a little bar now. You can search the transcripts of the videos on my Inmendum channel or the Draft Science channel. There'll be others added, so I guess that's some way you can participate if there's a channel you think that would be nice to be able to search the content of, the video content. Suggestions won't be ignored. I might not take them, but we'll see. There's advantages both to indexing adversarial websites as there is, allies. It's useful just to know context and all of that stuff, and that you can find some sort of relevant bits. So you can search words or phrases, and it does seem to work, quite well. So I typed in the word hate, and these are the videos on my Inmendum channel, and there's, gives you the context of where the word was, where it's just hate day. So that's life loving is not smart. So I don't remember what order the videos, if they necessarily come up in date sequence, but if there's more than one reference in a video, then you get more than one reference from the videos. They all look samey, don't they? Anyway, it lists like up to 100 per search. It's really quite nice. Guess I should add dates here for the videos, what date it is, so little things will be added as time progresses and things happen and blah blah blah. But just letting you know, it is there and it should work. The more people using it, probably it'll degrade in performance some, but who knows, we'll see. Just letting you know. That's all. No. So, the real story is the F-List website, which needs a lot of work. So, I'll get to that eventually. So, I just thought I would play Amanda's F-List video. Just because, it was whatever it is. Let's just pretend it's whatever. 6-year birthday, 7-year birthday, something like that. So, a while back. I think it's held up very well. I think it was written, it was just really well written. It's so I figure it's worth just going over because it's a simplification. It just makes the argument in a simple, direct way. Let's do that. Maybe I'll open this side thing. Seems to have worked. Let's see, I should be able to get it out of my way and see if it's... I'll fix that. Alright, so should be back and should be ready to play, and I probably have to fix the volume, but we'll see. So, she did the music, and it's really, it is a little bit grating and annoying, that's sort of the charm of it, of course, and, it kind of describes the uncomfortableness of the subject. I mean, it's just not comfortable to talk about how your life has this horrible context that you've basically been really expensive. The biosphere has to suffer for your oxygen, even. Even though this particular video doesn't go into all the nuances of how your life is a tragedy, that is, how you ruined other people's lives in all kinds of subtle ways you didn't even know. You changed their destiny into, you know, when they went from winning the gold medal, you know, to being homeless on the street because of something you did, and you didn't even know you did it. I mean, that's a circumstance that deserves a certain kind of sound, and this is the sound of the failure of our existence. Yes, okay, so now the movie begins. Yeah, very good. So this is a theme, the janitor, the idea that the only thing we really have to do here, if we really want to make the best out of our brain, the brain first has to recognize I'm not the only brain. And then the simple equation is brains that feel bad should feel better. And because feeling bad is bad. Even if Adolf Hitler has a toothache, the fact is it's pain in the universe, it's being experienced, and it's intrinsically bad. That's just a fact. And if you want to do something good with your brain, you stop things feeling bad. Now, obviously, you want to stop bad people doing bad things from doing bad things. So if you can make them feel bad to stop them from doing bad things, then feeling bad is worth it. But if it's not going to stop them from doing bad things, then their feeling bad is useless. This is all just, you know, part of understanding the context. It's not terribly subtle and complicated, but you do have to be a little bit careful about how you walk through your philosophical life, because there's lots of little places where you can, you know, step on the crocodile's head and pretend that works. You know, that's a rock. Well, it's not a rock. So at least this now we get a different theme, so that's good. You know, change of pace, you know, getting to the real story.
Ah, hello, fellow sentient. I am the janitor, and I'm here to present to you a full summation of the history and reality of sentient life on planet Earth, how we got here, and what this thing we call life is doing. Let's have a little conversation about what life really is.
Right. And so again, so the idea is, if your brain figures this stuff out about how there's other brains in the universe, and the only real good thing your brain can do is stop other brains and your own brain from feeling bad, and that's all there really is. So that's the cleaning up part. Living things are thrown into the pile, there's chaos. All you can do is fix the chaos. All you can do is try to apply some order to mitigate against all the unnecessary breaking of things. It's just as simple as putting things up on the shelf so the little kids can't knock them over. Just basic janitorial duties, keeping things less messy. Yeah, and that's it. That's the best your brain can do with its existence. And frankly, most of us, myself included, will fall short because my brain seems more important. You know, I'm a little more concerned about my brain. You know, not in any philosophical way. It's not like I've declared my brain superior and it's more important. I just feel like it is. You know, I can't get past the fact that this brain happens to be the one I have to actually experience, where the other brains, I can only understand their feelings. I can't feel their feelings. Now, if I could feel other people's pain, or if I had to, well, then I'd understand how important it is to get rid of it, right? So if I got somebody else's cancer, or if I got then I'd understand how important it is to prevent it and stop it and not let it happen again. But I can't, and I don't. So all I can do is understand.
Of its poor construction, its unintelligent design, its futility, its cruelty.
So, all facts. It's just a fact that it's just a bad story, okay? There's a choice you can make in your life. You can draw the conclusion that there's, you know, God and the universe is a smart creation, or you can understand there is no God, no creation, and it has to be by, you know, just laws of probability, a pretty stupid creation. I mean, something without a brain isn't going to drive a car very well. Something without a brain isn't going to fix chaos. Yeah, it just isn't. It's not going to happen. So the design is going to be unintelligent. And the consequence of an unintelligent design is a 99.99% probability that it's not going to be good. They're not going to make a house that, you know, ever withstands even normal air pressure. An unintelligent thing can't build.
And then let's further our conversation by discussing why it should never be imposed. Yes, that's right. Life is an imposition. So
that's the whole definition, the whole understanding that has to be, you know, so obvious, is that clearly you're making a brain. You're responsible for its creation. Now, what do you think it's going to do in the world? Well, if it's really a great person you're built, then it's stuck being a janitor. It's stuck spending its life cleaning up the vomit. I mean, it's just not going to be much fun being a hero, coming to the rescue. It's not. It's going to be work. It's going to be annoying. The fact that you can't fix a lot of things, that they're really, really broken and you can't do much to fix it, okay? All you got is a little Band-Aid, you know, and they got a bunch of arteries hemorrhaging. You know, it's going to be dismal and unpleasant work. And that's if you have a really great kid. You can only give him pain and suffering. And if you have a moron, then he's just going to make a mess in the world that somebody else has to clean up.
Let's talk about the meaning of life. Let's start from the beginning, shall we? For whatever reason, the universe initiated.
She did a really good job of taking the kernels of the physics I had talked about and illustrating it and stating the truth of it. So it's just really quite brilliant.
The Big Bang. Aberrant science.
So obviously I don't care about Big Bangs, Smig Bangs. The fact is the universe is just something oscillating, or it's something banging, or it's something something, and then it evolves. Then all of a sudden it can change over time. Yeah, and one of the consequences of that capacity is that weird things can happen. Very improbable events become, you know, not only possible but inevitable, because of the huge expanse of time in which this crap chaotically bounces about.
Science runs amok. Crude mechanics, crude physics, matter and energy. High energy photons smashing, crushing, pressurizing, creating elements. It's a mixing bowl. It's a chemistry set gone wild, with all the ingredients leaking into each other, commingling, lots of bad ingredients mixing badly. And then
Yeah, it's really good. I probably said that, but it's really good.
Gravity and nuclear forces start tying matter into bigger and bigger pieces, forming stars and planets, and of course with them, Earth. And on Earth, energized atoms form compounds, and after bouncing around for a few billion years, something happened. The universe, up until this point, was certainly violent, but benign, free of sentient creatures, and therefore free of suffering. But all that changed when the tragedy of Abe...
So, who knows, even if there's this kernel of a living thing on Earth. So, I suppose the one thing missing from this story of evolution and everything she did that's sort of dramatic is the transition from being single-celled organisms that we call alive, like a paramecium, or even one of your skin cells, a cell that we call a living thing, and the huge difference between using those living things to create a big giant blob of living things that's able to make a brain and make a video. That's a completely different plateau from which you evolve. So there's really two evolutions. The evolution that created cells, and then the evolution of multicellular organisms that are basically made of billions of little living creatures. Huge kind of... It's like it happened twice. Yeah. Two separate kinds of evolution. The evolution of chemistry that leads to a DNA molecule, then the evolution of biological life forms enslaved to a colony that evolves. The shape of the colony evolves.
Biogenesis occurred. The first reproducing cell...
I mean, you could argue buildings don't do anything interesting. They don't have brains. They can't think. But the city ends up being an evolving organism that acquires tools and capacities. Cities don't do that, but I just mean... Because they stay stuck. There's no function of evolution for cities. There's no... Cities don't have sex. You know, cities don't make babies.
DNA, our one single ancestor, the seed of sentient print media. And so, life arose in many mechanical forms. And eventually, life became conscious. We became sentient. And then...
And it's somewhere around this kind of animal, okay? That's where the first brain and the first ouch took place.
Perhaps the most pitiless step in all of our evolution, the first ouch. And this was truly the beginning of all problems in the universe.
Now we had something to lose. To, you know, when you don't feel, there's nothing to lose because you just say, well, I'll try again next time, so to speak. You know, who cares? It doesn't mean much. It just means that the one with the letter A on it won instead of the one with the letter B on it won. So who cares? Doesn't mean anything. But when you can destroy or replace or defeat something and do it by imposing suffering, well, then it's, you know, then the game has stakes. Now there's money. Now you're playing for money. That's a huge difference. It's a huge difference.
The most precious...
Alright, back. Sneeze. Mornings.
The best thing in the entire material universe is the capacity for a consciousness to generate a sensation of horror and unpleasantness.
So that's the most precious thing, she said. So the most precious, and so that's it. That's all you really have to understand. I can't assign a value to anything without recognizing the fact that the only thing that makes something valuable is its capacity to cause a feeling, relief or pain, you know. So I could have a vial of anthrax and I could have a vial of penicillin. And yeah, they could just look like a pen, could look like nothing, but it's something. Because it's relevant because of how much harm it can cause or how much pleasure it can provide the means to that end. And that's all there is. Everything's value only has value in the fact that it can do something. Oh, it can make the chore of hanging my clothes easier. That's it. There's just stuff about making us more or less comfortable. And that's how you assign value to everything in the universe, is what's it going to do for feeling things? Is it going to improve their condition or degrade their condition in terms of their living experience? And that's it. That's what defines the intrinsic or fundamental value of anything. That's its heat, you could say. That's its temperature. And it includes us. You know, we can be judged.
To be harmed and to suffer. That is where all value, not just some value, but all value is generated.
I mean, it's really an important statement in understanding that there's no such thing as superficial or cosmetic value. It all comes down to some real circumstance where something very real is going to have a good day or a bad day, that there's going to be or a good century or a bad century, or a good millennia or a bad millennia. It's just about how much pain and suffering is it going to cause, or is it going to prevent? And that's it.
In the consciousness of sensitive, sentient creatures.
So it should be stated that, you know, it's important to recognize that the chimpanzees out there right now, out in the weather, you know, having to eke out their leaf-eating existence, and, you know, every day, the grind, have to watch their little babies die, all of that crap. All of these are sentient organisms all the way down, and it keeps going all the way down to probably something like lizards. And, you know, even earthworms can learn, and you can make the argument that the only way, a good way of detecting whether something feels, is to test and see if it can learn. If it can learn, it probably can feel, because you can only learn by being rewarded from doing it right and being punished for doing it wrong, by having some mechanism that can make a distinction between getting the right answer and getting the wrong answer. And those answers, for us especially, are defined by how do I feel? How did the experience make me feel? You know that it happens all the time. It's called conditioning. And so the better some event is associated with positive experiences, you tend to float that way, and events associated with negative experiences become things you avoid and that impose on you anxiety or fear. And it's the same for all the other sentient brains. The same conditioning is happening.
Nature created better and better gladiators, directed and steered by the molecule, with the powerful motivators of pain and pleasure.
So there are no carrots. So this is the only slight flaw, is that, yes, it was realized later to say, well, why are we even talking about the carrots? Because the carrots really don't exist. There is no positive experience that isn't made of the getting rid of a negative threat. So everything that makes us feel good is really an inverted negative. And we're just saying, basically, I've escaped some punishment. I'm escaping the whip. So nature didn't bother with the carrot. It just created the whip. And with the whip, it could produce the illusion of good by just not whipping. So stopping, you know, stopping the pain was as good as giving pleasure.
Propelled by our want, our deprivation, to enter the maze game of ambition, desire, and delusion.
Right, so that's a complex subject. Did it well. Just, you know, it's hard to encompass the story of it, of how we're an addictive, motivated organism, and the motivations are all constructed into these emotional experiences, just those feeling things, fear and attraction. And those are made out of the things you're running from. So you could argue, I mean, a complex subject like a sadomasochist or something, or somebody, you know, who hurts themselves is usually hurting themselves to get rid of some other pain, some other psychological pain, is defeated by this little piece of crap. So you could understand somebody could have a compulsive disorder where they have a superstition, you know, about turning a light switch on and off. And you can understand that they have this terrible fear that if they do this wrong, okay, there's a terrible consequence. And so they'll wear their fingers to the bone not to, you know, break their mother's back by stepping on a crack. So they'll cause themselves a great deal of pain because they think they're preventing some much greater horror. I mean, so it does get complicated. But yes, we're just built to succeed. We're built to play the game, to be competitive, to fight, and to defeat. You know, people like watching fail videos. They like watching things lose, because we're designed to like it.
Human beings came from apes, and being raw animals, we didn't know how to control our world yet. We had to acquire our knowledge of everything. So we played the game, we picked and scratched at the world, trying to learn how it works.
Right, so we've had 10,000 or so years of semi-civilization, so, and in those, well, 20,000, you might be able to say, 15,000 anyway, where we had more than just Ugg and fire, you know. A little more complex language than that. And, yeah, that's all the we've had to completely grow up on our own, okay? There hasn't been anybody to teach us anything. Human beings had to write the religious books. You know, they weren't found under a rock somewhere. They're really poorly written, frankly. But anyway, yeah, we've had to sit here, and for 10,000 years, we've had to navigate through the world and try to figure out how it works and what makes it work and what's important and what's unimportant. And clearly, people haven't done that very well. I mean, you know, just a couple hundred years ago, we would line men up, you know, face to face with each other, and they'd just blow each other's heads right off. You know, or they'd run into a field with an axe in their hand and hack each other to pieces. So obviously, we hadn't figured much out. You know, we weren't figuring out how to play a good game. It was a pretty messy and sloppy game. We didn't have Social Security and didn't have safety nets and didn't have all kinds of stuff. Little orphans did starve and die or got brutalized and raped. We didn't fix much, and now we haven't fixed much else because now it's, you know, there's no reasoning to the system. It's all built on unsustainable crap, where you're going to have an endless supply of something, or you're going to make an endless supply of something. All things that aren't going to work. Everybody can't have a beach house. And we still haven't even figured that out.
We refined our intelligence. But all of human history, we've struggled to accept the truth. We've given magic...
Right, so that was good, making fun of the hippies. You know, because that was a real change, frankly, for the human race. Had a chance to take this idea of caring for one another and actually doing it, but they decided to go to the disco instead. So it didn't work out. It wasn't a very deep philosophical understanding. It was just sort of a trivial, oh, I wish the world was more fun, kind of silliness.
Powers to crystals, we phantasmagoricalize the truth.
There, that's the great word. From Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, really is a good word. You know, and yes, it's just too silly. Just, you know, people have just sit there and ignored the real biology, the real story of our creation, what we're really built to do, which is be competitive and nasty and selfish and sucky, and pretended it all has some great destiny. Where, you know, everything's going to be okay. It's just bullshit.
Trees and the dark and the animals. And at some point, we became smart enough to think up the dumb idea of God.
So that's a good little line. You know, we became smart enough to think up the dumb idea of, oh yeah, there was a creator, and so it's all his fault, and so I don't have to take accountability for the world, because I'll just let God take care of it. He'll take care of it. He'll do it. He'll fix it. It's his problem. It's his creation. We're not the smartest driver on the bus, so we don't have to, you know, so we don't have to drive. That's all. It's just an excuse to sit in the chair and play games, because they don't want to have to do the nasty job of trying to drive this shit, this rickety piece of crap, down these rickety roads. They don't want to take accountability for their life, or their species, or their race, or their ethnicity, or their anything. They don't want any responsibility for any part of their existence, so they just blame some bullshit, and it's its fault. It's got a plan. That's the lie. So, yeah, really a big mistake, a big fart that a brain can make. The ultimate fart is to pass the frickin' buck. And that's all religion is.
It's an explanation for life. We had become smart enough to become superstitious, but not smart enough to know that's all we were doing.
Yeah, so it doesn't take much smart to figure out you're just lying and pretending. There really isn't any logic to it. I mean, it says right in the dictionary, the definition of faith is belief without reason. It might as well just say illogical nonsense. Because that's what it is. It's illogical nonsense. For some personal reason, I'm going to evade reality and pretend it's a nursery rhyme, and it's not. It's real life. The cancer is real. All the shit is real. And it's just idiotic to pretend it's all part of some master plan. The little dead children from cancer. It's part of the master plan. We wanted you to grow some character, so we tortured your children. I mean, it's so stupid. I mean, you really can't believe people are that dumb. So you have to understand that they're that selfish. I want to avoid it. I don't want to live in the real world. I don't want the responsibility to take responsibility for the fact that I'm allowing kids to be molested, or I'm allowing things to be harmed. I'm allowing bad things to happen in the world. Because I'm not doing a damn thing about it, I'm just eating my chocolate bars.
We had drawn the wrong conclusions. And we have sentenced billions upon billions of lives, both animal and human animal, to those wrong conclusions, as well as nearly an infinite number of other bad ideas.
So it's really just just the truth. I mean, that big bad idea is a real big bad idea because it's if you don't have a fake God to blame. Then again, you're the smartest person on the bus. You've got to take responsibility. There's a lifeboat. Somebody's got to be in control, so to speak. Somebody's got to hold the gun and say, look, this is the way it has to be, okay? Because everybody can't be in the boat at the same time. Some of you have to be in the water. There's no way for the boat to stay afloat. We got too many needs, too few resources to satisfy the needs. Everybody can't eat as much as they want. They can't drink as much as they want. It's just a fact. And nobody wants to take responsibility. That's the position every human being is in, is you're in this chaotic circumstance, this lifeboat, where real destinies will be compromised, will be traded off. Real hard, awful decisions where you're going to choose to, there's 15 people wanting the job and you have to choose, what 14 get fucked and their life is ruined and who gets the chance to win. That's the reality. That's obviously can't be sold as some sort of fun thing. Oh, we're going to have fun now. Why we ruin other people's existence, why we destine them to cancer and failure. Oh, yeah, that's fun. Go ahead, have a kid. Play roulette with your fucking kid. Roll it like, paint little signs on your children and then roll them and see what. Oh, the skull and crossbones came up. Oh, too bad, we have to kill it. I mean, it's ridiculous how disconnected people are from the reality, how just dismal and horrid it is, and how bleak. And they're all sitting there trying to pretend it's a party.
We are addicted. But amongst the din, amongst the fol-de-rol and celebration and parades, a few voices have expressed a different idea about life. An idea that articulates that life is a failed experiment, that to create it is an imposition, and that it is simply wrong to create need for no need. Simply stated that it is unethical to procreate. Don't have kids.
Unfortunately, most of these people that did do that in the past in any kind of way never formed the argument as well as she just did. So this is the right argument. The right argument, it's broken from the origin, the whole natural system is a bloodbath, a grotesque obscenity. The themes, the very theme of rolling dice with your children, gambling is grotesque with somebody else's welfare. This is a grotesque thought. that you're going to try to make some personal gain out of somebody else's personal risk, that is slavery. That's disgusting. And that's the world that exists. And very, I'd say none of them got that. The 5 minutes she just did, none of them really understood those 5 minutes. They did understand that life sucks. They understood their culture sucks. They understood their system sucks. They understood lots of stuff, but they really didn't understand it's broken from the very core. The whole idea of this cannibalism that we're involved in, where we compromise each other for our comfort, is a bad idea. This musical chairs where there's a billion people trying to sit in 17 chairs, that's really stupid. Take a pause. All right, continuing. It's going to get rough. It's going to get rough. This bit isn't rough, but it's going to get rough.
There's no reason for a parade after all. You are doomed. And this idea is called antinatalism.
Not many have spoken about antinatalism in the past, but among them there has been Arthur Schopenhauer.
So this was, I guess, in a period where, you know, playing with how to describe oneself. And I wasn't quite as hostile to antinatalism 7 years ago as I am now as a kind of a concept, because doing the right thing for the wrong reason, I mean, being against kids for the wrong reason, that's not likely to work in the long run. So you have to be against something for the right reason, not the wrong reason. Getting right answers for, you know, with wrong formulas doesn't work. It's not doing it right. And so, antinatalism is a conclusion. Effelism is the reason for the conclusion.
If children were brought into the world by an act of pure reason alone, would the human race continue to exist?
Peter Zapfe?
A coin is turned around before it is handed to a beggar, yet a child is unflinchingly tossed into cosmic bruteness.
So, you know, good points just about how it's not thoughtful. People don't have kids for thoughtful reasons. They just have them because they're like candy. It's like a dessert. It's a trivial thing. It's a superficial cosmetic thing. It's like buying a piece of jewelry. They're really not thinking about the insane responsibility tied to what they're doing and what the consequences can be and what they're probably going to be. And they're instead living in a delusion that the kid is going to forever love them and be ever devoted to them, and, you know, they're really not getting it.
And Emile Choron, to name a few.
We have lost being born as much as we shall lose dying.
Everything, right. And it's, you know, I suppose more than everything, in the sense that you can never undo it. You can never undo the bad experiences as realities and things that happen. Even if you have you write a very nice song, you do a very nice thing, you do something to compensate in some way for the grief and the horror, you can't undo it. And so all you can do is try to prevent something as great, because that's the only way you kind of get some undo power, is by not allowing something to do, some new do to happen. And that's the only power you have to undo it, is to create, to prevent something of equal worthiness of deletion. So because things happen, we'd like to delete. If we prevent something that in the future that we had to hit, that we would want to hit the delete button for, then we've kind of undone the weight of missing the opportunity the first time.
Then there was effelism. It's antinatalism plus. It's life spelt backwards. It's just another way of saying I believe there is something fundamentally broken in the natural mechanism of the circumstance we call life.
Yeah, that's a pretty simple statement. Just recognizing that it's unintelligent design. And that's not a good thing. And that we can't redesign it. It's pretty much impossible to redesign it into some sort of benign system because it's built on concepts, child murder, that you can't fix. Child jeopardy, child risk.
Another way of raising your hand and saying, yes, it is unintelligent design. No God created this. And life existing as the product of that unintelligent design has real negative consequences on sentient creatures. Evolution has consequences.
It has probabilities, and none of the probabilities are in our favor. Okay? Right? From the Hunger... What's that? May there something be in your favor. Yeah, whatever. The odds. Yeah, they're not. They can't be.
Unintelligent design is going to create huge volumes of waste and sloppiness. Unintelligent design means an ocean of suffering.
It really is bad. Just as a side note, that yeah, the Gray video is also on the Effortless channel called Unintelligent Design, which is a lovely piece of art.
Unintelligent design means insufficient sufficiency. And that insufficiency is not only deep within the system, but that the products of the system, the living things themselves, are likewise not functioning efficiently.
Again, our brain doesn't do what we can logically know is the right thing. It's compelled, all right, by emotions and, that bias us and corrupt us, constantly antagonizing us with horrible images of our personal price we will have to pay if we do anything nice. I mean, there's a building on fire. What does your brain do? It says, well, you don't want to be burned. it starts telling you, it starts giving you reasons not to do the right thing, like go rescue somebody or something, Or else it does exactly the opposite, right? It tries to tell you you can get over being a failure in your life. You killed 5 people as a drunk driver or as a kid, and you did this and you did that, and oh, I can fix it if I go be a hero. So it just plays an emotional game. It doesn't allow you the purity of actually reasoning, looking at the circumstance and saying, should I press the go button or the stop button? It doesn't allow you to make that decision without clouding the decision with a bunch of personal emotional problems. And that's a big flaw. Our brains are corrupted by our emotional conditioning as selfish, I need organisms.
They consume more than they produce. We throw need machines into a world from which they can never derive satisfaction without imposing unsatisfied need onto something else.
Yes, without compromising something else's interest. I have to marry the pretty woman now. The pretty woman won't be somebody else's wife, and now he's going to have a crappy life without the pretty woman. I mean, it happens all over the place, constantly. For you to win, somebody else has to lose. For you to get the advancement or the promotion, somebody else didn't get it. It just sucks. It's a bleak horror, that we have to play a game like that. That an intelligent organism has to play a silly game of thief and crook.
So I will use terms like zero-sum game to describe life, because life does precisely that.
So I came up with that zero-sum game argument that, there are no carrots. All we're really doing is trying to reduce the number of backs that have, whip lines running down them. All you can do is take the negative bits out. You're not going to preserve anything called positive, so you just try to make it less negative. You're just trying to struggle to get above the line of the quicksand, but there's nowhere to go. You're in a dungeon, and you're never going to climb out. All you can do is gain sideways advantage. You can move sideways, but you can never move out. All the way. But anyway, so it's the same as Bentar's asymmetry argument, essentially, where you recognize that the real value is in the negative experience, and positive experiences really are just made out of getting rid of a negative. That you can't really not, you can't kill a positive. There's no way to destroy a positive, because it's always made out of getting rid of a negative. It's the real value. It's a whip game, not a carrot game. It's the simple argument.
We steal energy perpetually, all to replicate a DNA molecule. A molecule that understands nothing of the price paid in suffering by the sentient creatures of this planet. We should be awestruck contemplating 4 billion years of sentient creatures ripping apart other feeling sentient creatures.
Alright, so it's not 4 billion, it's more like 1 billion, since maybe trilobites, I don't know, you know, how far back you have to go. To get a brain, you're really just, you're talking, what, 400, 500 million years ago? I don't know. But anyway.
Continued only out of ignorance, ego, and notions rolling around in heads about life being good.
So let's understand, it's now very clear that that's all it is notions in the head. And we know that the intelligent people have already got the more sophisticated notion that it is a huge responsibility, that I have to take care of this thing, I have to provide for this thing, I really do have to structure my life to do it right. And the only people who aren't recognizing the huge responsibility are these dumbass morons, humans, the stupidest humans, are creating all of the excess, all of the energy that generates this forward motion. All population, human population on Earth would be in decline if people, all the people on Earth were high school educated. Just a fact. If you go by the statistical numbers, the birth rate among people who have a high school education or better is way below replacement. And the birth rate of the people who don't accomplish that little bit of education, they're the ones with a birth rate unsustainably growing.
Ignoring with every breath the truth. If it wasn't for that stupid meteor impact, we'd have none of this grace and beauty and love and art. We know where 99.999% of life has been. It's only a tiny fraction, one grain of sand in an entire beach of time that human beings have spent contemplating how joyous and wonderful life is.
Yes, philosophizing, too, which is the important, really thinking. So real thinking, okay, intelligent thought has only been around for this 10,000 years or so, and all of the other, all for the whole rest of human history and animal history, it's just been brutal retard, eating brutal retard, beating up, genocides, all kinds of, just absolute moronic brutality, because they didn't know. Lions don't know the harm they cause. Do you think all the lions, if they did know, would continue the behavior? Come on, get real.
Life is a replicating and reproducing piece of DNA. For no rhyme or reason, for no purpose, to satisfy no destiny, to do none of that.
Just because a couple of chemicals banged into each other. That's it. That's why we're here. That's why we're having this conversation. The whole thing is just because it could happen, and it ended up did happen, but there's nothing about the price paid for it that makes it at all reasonable. And if you're sick enough to think that, oh yes, you would have pressed the button. I mean, just tell me that you're really saying that you have thought about hundreds of millions of years of molestation and rape and brutal, slow, horrible deaths. and you're saying what we're doing now is just so cool that it would be worth it, and that you'd actually do it. You'd actually press that button that has in it all the psycho killing, all of that horror imposed on feeling creatures, being born without limbs, all kinds of crap. And you'd sit there and press that button, and somebody shouldn't hate your guts. Yeah, shouldn't find that so repugnant. That's good enough. It's good enough to torture billions and billions of sentient creatures so you can have a ham sandwich tomorrow? Man, what scum you are.
It's just an accident of biology, of aberrant chemistry. We reject this game.
Yeah, it's all it takes. You just raise your hand and say, me too. World changes if enough people just raise their hand and say, me too. But they won't do it. You know, it really is hilarious. It doesn't take much work to make the right things happen in the world, you know. But all they really do is say, we'll create a racket where you get $50 and, you know, we steal it from that guy over there. That's what you'll me too to. But, you know, bullshit and nonsense. Games that can't work. But as long as it's sold to you as, this game will help you and hurt them.
Ethylism is knowing that life is an imposition. Ethylism is understanding that all value in the universe is derived from the conscious experience of sentient feeling creatures. Ethylism is the janitorial duty of trying to have a conversation with the human race about wasted suffering.
The janitorial duty, again, coming from the realization that it's not about me. This song wasn't, you know, the world wasn't written, you know, about you. You know, you're so vain. It isn't. It is this, the planet doesn't exist for you. It isn't your marble. It isn't any of that crap. And that there's so much at stake here. Again, the future is gigantic, theoretically. Huge number of people that need to be saved. Lots of work for you as a Superman to come to the rescue. Just sitting there waiting for you. They're waiting for you. They're hanging off the cliff, you know, in the future. And they're just waiting for you to read the right script. To pick up the script that says, that's my job. Instead of the script that says, go eat a chocolate bar. That's it. They're just waiting for you to save the day. And instead, what are you doing?
And the responsibility of manufacturing a graceful exit. And that's where I come in. As janitor, I will be your guide. And your first lesson is, life is consumption, reproduction, cannibalism, and addiction.
So we sort of reorganized that when I found out the obvious, when I realized the obvious that C-R-A-P would be better. So we just changed it to addiction and parasitism. So parasitism is a nicer word. I mean, technically it's closer to the cannibalism idea. The idea isn't that we just eat our neighbors. No. Are just human beings. You know, we consume the welfare of all kinds of feeling things every single day. We're eating their suffering and going yum yum. And so it even works better, but it is a little more, you know, doesn't sing like consumption, reproduction, cannibalism, addiction. That's a better song than, you know, consumption, reproduction, addiction, and parasitism. Yeah, that's not as good a song. But anyway, same difference.
That is what it is. Those are
crap. See, that's what it should be. Crap. That would look so much better with crap. But that happened right when she was making the movies, when I changed the acronym. So she had already done this, and so, you know.
The ingredients that make up the reality of life on planet Earth. Consume so that we may reproduce, and and on an island planet in an otherwise barren universe.
It sort of should be understood that we're consuming things like position. You know, so you fight to be king, or you fight to be, God, I just hate that I can't, you know, vocabulary really just slips away from you with age. Chief. Okay, so you want to be chief of the tribe. So it's more than just consuming food. You're consuming position in the world to facilitate your reproduction, right? So you become Ivan the Terrible, some other kind of bullshit, and you have 568 kids. So that's more... The game is about advantage. So it's AREP. Yeah, advantage reproduction. Yes, you consume an advantage. And there's huge advantage in having food resources, obviously. But there's, you know, there's all kinds of advantage.
We cannibalize each other.
We cannibalize the environment. We suck its blood, literally. We vampire all over the place.
Fueling it all are our addictions, our crazed psychologies, our egos, our wants, our desires. We are...
Our dissatisfaction, the mechanical function of dissatisfaction, it always shows up. Problems always show up. That's what your brain is good at doing. Find a problem, find a problem. So first it finds the big ones like, oh, there's a nail in my eye, I better pull that out. So I fix the nail in the eye problem, and then I say, I don't have a wife and I'm lonely. And then I fix that problem, and then it's like, I have a wife and I'm irritated. And then so I have to come up with a divorce court. You know, then I have to do this. It's just problem solving. Constant little irritation. So no matter what I give you, no matter how comfy I make your bed, something else will itch. Something else will get in your comfort way. And that's the design of the machine. And that's really insidious.
Addicted, insatiable, need machine.
Insatiable is the key word. You can only satiate you for 5.7 minutes. And then all of a sudden, I need a strawberry. Does anybody have a strawberry? I need a strawberry. You know, some kind of bullshit.
So now let's begin. Let's start with an easy one first. Perhaps a familiar tale to show you what you already know about the folly of imposing new life.
So this is the good part. So she did a great job. She did the whole gender thing, and now she's just going to use some metaphors and illustrations. So it was just, you know, really well done. And this first one is perfect. The Frankenstein analogy is just beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Fantastic job of turning a story into, you know, 2 minutes. And just spectacularly well done. Just fantastic. You're going to enjoy this if you've never seen it. This is perfect.
This is reproduction.
Once in a castle long ago, there lived Dr. Frankenstein. The doctor was an evil, sadistic, shithead of a fucktard who delighted in creating and imposing life on as many beings as possible.
Yeah, so just perfect. Oh, just spectacular.
Bust! Populate!
In his lab, the doctor had two powerful buttons, one big green button and one big red button. Dr. Frankenstein never pressed the red button, because it was the big red button, capable of ending all existence in the universe instantaneously.
Why is this even here?
But Dr. Frankenstein loved his big green button, for whenever it was pressed, it allowed him to create strong, healthy, and beautiful creatures, who were the happiest people the world had ever known.
So I suppose a little bit improvement here would be some recognition that the doctor is taking ownership of all the little successful things. Okay, so a bunch of little successful things wearing their little jewelry and, you know, playing with pink balloons or something, and taking satisfaction in saying, look what I made, this clean stuff that I put on a little pedestal over here. You know, I made this diamond, but I'm not gonna account for all the dead men who had to dig it out of the ground. You know, I'm not going to account for all of the ruined horror and hardship. So So that's 99% of what gets farted out of a uterus is a moron. Or a silly, trivial jerk. fucktard.
However, for every 10 of these stupid happy creatures, a Frankenstein monster was
born. Life sucks.
Yeah, so something that isn't going to succeed and isn't going to experience life as a selfish being. So it's either got intelligence as its liability, it's too smart and it can see that it's too much, too high a price is being paid for too little profit and it's not happy with that. Or it has a physical disability or some other psychological problems, all kinds of ways to manifest a functionality that's not going to fit in the world, and it's going to get squished, and it's going to get prodded, and it's going to get poked, and it's going to be antagonized by just about every moment of its existence.
Hideous, diseased, blighted with a thousand horrors, miserable.
Oh, fuck. Out, out, out.
So that's the real game. It's just to pretend all the bad stuff didn't happen. Pretend it away, make it disappear, make it go away, blah, 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 blah. So that reminds me of my sister. Just because, you know, she got ground up the hardest way you could, just very, very slowly. She caught the meat grinder just in the wrong way, and it just ate her up. You know, hour, day after day after day of just, you know, this bleak, horrible suffering for years. And, how do you ever, you know, can you make something in this planet? Can you create something? Can you do something that somehow compensates for that? That somehow says, well, that's worth doing again. Let's do that again to somebody else. Because we're going to build a cathedral. Or, you know, we're going to, what? What exactly are you going to do? You know, play your radio too loud and take the muffler off your car. That's what you're going to do.
And banished. Some Frankenstein monsters couldn't take it and killed themselves.
So that's all worth it. So, yes, it's, you know, whatever it is, a million people. I mean, it's a large number of people every year have to go through this anguish, this difficulty of, you know, ending it all. Very difficult thing to do. And, you know, and then there's the 10 times that number, or 20 times, or 40 times, or 50 times that number, who don't have enough courage to get the job done. So they have to endure another year or two or five of being in horrible pain.
Others realized that if they killed themselves, Dr. Frankenstein would just keep on making more monsters, more harmables, and more misery.
So they recognize that they're basically going to now try to save their little brother from the same rape. So they've been raped, brutalized, destroyed, and now all they can do is save tomorrow's victim. Just imagine it as your little brother, and then you'll come to the rescue. It's not hard to figure out. Tomorrow's victims are my little brother. I'm going to try to save them. I'm going to save them from you. Okay, and yeah, maybe I'll sound a little too aggressive, but I'm going to save them by getting a cop to stop you. Okay, I'm going to try to do it through the process. But just understand what's really going on here. There's something real at stake. It's not just some silly notion.
The monsters looked at the stupid happy creatures and realized...
We are the cost of this! We are the price paid!
And so there was only one thing left to do. It was time to pick up their axes and storm the castle!
So again, this is a metaphor. I mean, obviously, we could storm them with lawyers. We could storm them with a democracy and a president. We can storm them with, an appropriate trial and conviction.
Hello, doctor. Are you surprised to see me? You! Stop making feeling things.
Seems pretty simple. Yeah, it's a good argument. Stop it, okay? It just isn't fair, okay? You don't have their consent. You're playing your little silly trivial game with something else's welfare. It's disgusting to try to derive your comfort or happiness in the world by risking something else's welfare. It's just not a nice thing to do.
No! You didn't ask my permission to be born! Ha! I don't need your permission! The happiness of me.
No, see, there's not even a rationalization. The fact is, you don't need it because evolution doesn't care. Evolution doesn't give things power based on how well they can use it. It just gives power. So the power to replicate is built in, so everybody has the power to do it. And the argument is just simply, because you can buy a gun and shoot your neighbor, do you have a right to do it?
Most of the creatures I create justifies your life of suffering.
So that was really good. Yes, that's all it is. That's all having babies is candy. That's all people really are doing. They're just looking for a little treat. They're thinking of it as some kind of thing that's going to enhance their life in some silly way, some trivial, stupid, show-off way. Oh, it'll be cute and it'll do cute things and it'll make me look like such a, some kind of bullshit. It has nothing to do with recognizing that that's going to be a fully developed human, okay? That's not going to stay a puppy. It's going to turn into a dog.
They serve no function in the universe. They fix nothing. Nonsense. Life is a great idea. Why don't you just kill yourself? Because then I wouldn't be able to stop you. Oh, shit. No, don't.
That was just brilliant. What can I say? You did a great job. And so the rest of the movie's worth watching. There's more metaphors, but that was a complete story for me. To me, the story is that. That's what an Ephelist is. An Ephelist is just fighting for the victims. It's just trying to stop more horror in the future. It's just saying, let's prevent it. We're not going to lose anything, and we're going to gain everything. That's the definition of the rescue mission. There is no other mission. There is no other way to save the future than to prevent the future. And it's just a fact. That's the circumstance. If there was some other way to save the future, then yeah, let's do that. But it really isn't. There's no other practical, pragmatic, sensible idea of a real rescue. Lifeboats just can't work. So don't make them. All right. I mean, overcrowded lifeboats. Anyway. So, really, a brilliant little piece of art. Can't really state how impressive it is that she was able to take the sloppy, scattered bits of crap, I argued, and turned it into such a nice, clean, 12 minutes and 34 seconds of very coherent storytelling. Just a great job. So, till the next time, I'll call that a video, and such, and so forth, and whatnot. Yeah. The Ephelist. The movie.